Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Creative Kale, where, as a spin-off to our usual box set podcast, I talk to someone with interesting perspectives on the world to make sense of the world of creative management. Previously, I've spoken to the director of photography of The West Wing and to a hugely successful TV presenter and comedian, and now a guest that I'm possibly even more excited to speak to and comes perhaps more from the business end of the equation than my previous guest, so it's going to be fascinating. He has held many top roles in hospitality through his life and has journeyed between companies and positions and was so talented that he made it to Walt Disney World Resort as executive vice president. This man has his own world of material at the moment online that you can see if people interested in the subject of management and creativity and all things magical, ranging from his own app to Lessons in Leadership blog, his own podcast, which is excellent, and whole books that he's somehow found the time to write, all on his website, leecockerell.com. Please welcome Lee Cockerell. Hi, Lee.
Hi there, good to be with you.
My goodness, are you okay? I'm worried that you might be monopolizing the world of work for 20 other people.
Well, I'm actually organized. so that helps.
That's the secret.
I schedule books to write in, and then I schedule a nap, and I schedule going out to dinner. So I get it all in.
I'm the same, Lee. Do you use a specific kind of app for that? I just use lists in my phone.
Actually, I teach a time management seminar now, and I told everybody to forget those apps. None of them work right. You ought to go back to a day timer, a planner, put it in your pocket. Paper works better. Yeah. And most people who go back after they read my book, they say they don't know why they left in the first place. I mean, so, technology is good for a lot of things, but it's not good for everything.
So in a way, what your book does is say, all of these books that have been around for 15 years, ignore them, throw them away, get back to basics. I like that. I'm the same. I just use the notes in my phone and everything's on there from, you know, buy bin bags, buy trash bags to, I've not quite put go to the toilet, but I'm almost there.
It is the biggest problem people have, not being organized and disciplined and keeping their promises and doing what they say they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I've spoken to lots of creative people making entertainment, and I know that you're not particularly the performer, although you get to do podcasts and you've been creative and writing books. But what I've heard of you so far is that you are a good boss. Would you describe yourself, Lee, as having been a good boss for the entirety of your career?
Well, I don't know if I've been a good boss all of my career, but I've been a good boss most of my career. Yeah. And I at first, when I started out, are you there?
Yes, here,
I heard a noise here. When I first started out in my career, I was a good manager. I'm very disciplined. I'm very organized. I get things done. But I must say, in the beginning, I probably used my position and a little more intimidation than I should have to get things done. But I learned over time that really the way you get things done is to build trust. Mm-hmm. If people don't trust you, they won't do the work for you. They won't do as much for you as you need them to do. And so I'm pretty good at hiring, so I hire the right people. I hire the experts. I take my time when I hire somebody. And then I let them do their job. I don't try to micromanage them. I expect them to do their job, and then that means I have to spend my time where I can make a difference. And so that was one. I tell people the truth. I tell them when I hire them and when they work for me that you'll always hear the truth from me, whether it's good, bad, or ugly, because I want you to be successful, just like your mother used to tell you the truth, mm-hmm. and because she loved you mm-hmm. and wanted you to be successful. I think a lot of leaders don't do that. Mm. I will make sure you get trained and developed so you can have a better life down the road. We'll get you the right training, or you'll get the right feedback. You'll get the the things you need to know to improve your skills. I will expect you to help train yourself also, whether it's listening to my podcast or reading my books or reading other books or other podcasts. You got to educate yourself because I need people who want to learn and want to be better. And I don't overreact. I'm very low-key. I don't scream and yell. I don't try to intimidate anybody. I don't raise my voice to anybody. I don't threaten anybody. I just am clear with them. And then if I have a tough conversation with somebody, it's very quiet. I just tell them the truth. And, hey, this is not working, guy. You're coming to work late. The way you speak to people in a meeting is inappropriate. And I need that to stop or you're not going to be able to stay here. And, you know, just tell the truth. Don't spin it. Then there's clarity. You know, the biggest problem we have in life, people are not clear. When you're clear, there's no misunderstandings. So that's what I did. And I tried to make myself better all the time. I tried to help people with their aspirations, help them with the interviews, get them into the right jobs, that kind of stuff. I just looked after them. And I guess that's the key in life. Look after your people like you look after your kids.
Do you also, did you find, and do you think, when you think back to, you mentioned the early days when perhaps you were a little more harsh or less about trust. Yeah. Do you look back and think, actually, also that is more exhausting to be a kind of micromanager or to be on people's backs is more exhausting than when you learn to trust people?
Absolutely. I mean, when you think you got to do everything or sign everything or be involved in everything, it's torture and you end up working longer hours and Saturday and Sunday and all the time. And absolutely, when you trust people and you take your time to hire the right person and be clear with them what their responsibilities are and then let them do their job, that gives you time to do whatever you need to do in your own, but go make sales calls or work on the hiring process or whatever you're good at. And then you just get a lot more done. And by the way, when people know you trust them, they get more done too.
Yeah. And I also find when people feel like, it's something I teach my students a lot as well, I often say to them, you know, particularly students, because they've spent their life in education and they've not been outside of that circle, I often find there's a challenge with, I always tell them to try and think that everything was their idea. So if they're given a brief, if they're given, you know, they've got to do certain things to pass this test, you know, they, particularly with projects in creative fields, so they might have to create a portfolio of work based on a certain subject. I often say to them, you know, if you can think that this was your idea and not me telling you to do this, yeah, you'll enjoy it more and you'll achieve more and you'll actually think more like you than me. Is there's something in the empowerment of that which always brings surprises?
Well, everybody wants to be appreciated. Everybody wants to know they matter. That's a kind of the human need in life, and everybody needs appreciation, recognition, encouragement. Yeah. And when you give them that, they do better than they ever thought they could.
Yeah,
because you built their self-confidence and self-esteem and belief in themselves, and that's really the name of the game. A lot of people are very insecure, and then they don't think they can do it. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, don't underestimate what you can do. Don't underestimate it. Even if you need help, you can ask for help, but you can do it. And don't be just because you didn't build that self-confidence, security when you were growing up. Keep focused. Go out there in the world and make it happen. You can do it.
It's funny because I used to be, you know, particularly in my 20s, because I think a lot of people are in their 20s, I was fearless and I was, I didn't think I could do, I thought I was better than everybody at what I was doing. And then you learn things about life and you learn that there's perhaps more nuance to things. And it was really interesting to me that in the last couple of years that my presenting partner and I were on the radio, I think we probably went a year and a half without anybody ever saying anything good to us, anything encouraging. And yeah, I think there was I think there became a sort of mentality in certain managers that we had that really believed that the way you get the best out of people is to scare them into it. Is this an unusual experience, or do you hear about this a lot? Do you hear that people genuinely think that cracking the whip is the only way forward?
Oh, I hear that a lot. Not only that, they believe that they're the only ones that know anything. They don't trust anybody, and they're going to intimidate people. Half the time, the boss doesn't even know, knows less than the people they're managing. and they don't ask their opinion, and people don't feel like they matter. And and then there's companies who are doing a good job of making sure they want all their people to step up and be involved in the company.
And but, where does that come from? Where, how does somebody get to that position as a manager, do you think? Where do they come to that conclusion that that's the best way to achieve results?
Well, I think it starts at the top, and I think there's people out there that they understand their own values. They understand treating people respectfully. They knew that even before they came the boss and became the CEO. Mm-hmm. They probably learned that at home. They probably have those kind of values that they live up to, of respect and inclusiveness and giving up, not applying any bigotry or racism to their decisions, that everybody's good and everybody has a chance, and treat people as individuals. And there are people who do that, and then there are people who don't, because they were raised in a different way and they're insecure and authoritarian, and that takes you down the wrong path. But wow, this is, it's changing, because young people today won't hang around if you don't treat them right. I mean, in the U.S. they quit. I mean, they'll be gone.
Well, I think it's partly because we know now, the younger generation, perhaps we are aware that there isn't a job for life in many places. So it's not worth putting up with, because you think, well, there's no massive pension at the end of this. There's no, we're likely to be moving on in 5 years anyway, so we may as well move on now, you know.
Yeah, and the company will fire you the first time there's a problem anyway.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, you got to think about it. If the company's not committed to you, you're not going to be committed to them. And most people don't trust companies. They don't trust leadership. They don't trust anybody. They don't believe anybody, what anybody says. And that's the kind of, it takes a lot of work to create an environment and a culture where people believe you and trust you. And you got to work on that every day, because you get more done. They'll do more. You get, make more profits. You make less turnover. You, all the good things that happen when you have trust with people. And so, yeah. And by the way, you said that you used to think that you knew everything. Well, I did too. But you don't need to know everything, but you need to start, you need to learn something new every day. Make sure at least you're getting better.
I agree. And learn off others, you know that there's, I was a theatre director before anything else. I trained as a theatre director, and I used to see how different directors treated casts. And there were the two types that you've just talked about, really. There was the fascist, and there was the opposite of a fascist, I suppose. There was someone who believed that they could get the best out of these 12 brains in front of them by knowing that that 12 brains equals 12 times the genius. And then there was the guy who believed that his brain was the only thing that mattered, and it just killed everyone else's brain, and you ended up with something worse. But I seem to have seen it a lot. I wonder about how much of this way of thinking was formed in you before you went to Disney, and how much came from working at Disney.
I would say I learned a lot of it at Marriott. I worked for Hilton 8 years, and they were pretty authoritarian. Mm-hmm. Because, by the way, it was back in the 70s where leadership, that's the way leaders led everywhere.
Yeah.
And then I went to Marriott, who was a family organization, and they were excellent at how they treated people, respect, inclusiveness, took care of people, helped you with your career, did good training. That's where I really started to learn about my behavior had more impact than my knowledge. And I was lucky to work for them. They were terrific. I stayed there 17 years. And then I started thinking about leadership. I read about it. I started reading about it. I started thinking about it. I started going to seminars about it to understand how you become a good leader, what it looks like to the people being led, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I gradually, but I got better and better and better at it. And I was pretty insecure in my early days. So as I got more secure, I didn't have to tell people what to do. I tell people we need less bosses and more teachers.
Yeah.
I mean, people are just trying to intimidate people and teach, you know, boss them around. Those days are over.
Yeah.
If you want to be successful.
Yeah. And also, I always kind of think of the world at its simplest level and go back to sort of caveman. Caveman days. And I think, okay, so when was the first time we needed a leader? Let's say there were two of us around the campfire, and one of us had to collect the wood, and one of us had to make the flame. That's that's good. But then there was a bunch of people and we needed to make 5 fires. And the quickest way of doing this before sun went down would be for some kind of group organisation. And from that, you can either imagine that there was this boss that was shouting at everyone and telling them which way they should do it, or there was someone who naturally had to take the wider perspective to enable everybody to do their firelighting.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes it is natural. I mean, it's not, you know, you can even watch a group of young kids playing. You can tell who the boss is and who's in charge.
Yeah.
And who not so much who people will listen to and who they take direction from, because they trust them and they believe in them, and either that person's shown skill or sensitivity or something.
Yeah.
And bosses emerge. Even sometimes the people who make the most impact in a business is not even the boss. It's somebody down below that has influence with everybody.
Yeah.
And if they say it's right, then people will do it. And leaders come in all shapes and sizes and ages.
Yeah, yeah.
In my opinion.
Mm. So let's get on to Disney. So I'm fascinated by both Walt Disney's story. Have you read Neil Gabler's book about Disney? About Walt Disney?
No, I don't think so.
Well, it's this book that I picked up, and it was one of those books where you start reading it and you go, oh, this is hard work. It was kind of very academic, down to every detail of Walt's great 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 grandfather and mother and which farm tractor they bought first and things.
Yeah.
And I put it down, and 9 months later I was lying in the bath and I didn't have anything to read, and I picked it up again, and it became the best book I've ever read in my life. I was fascinated by it, and I've never been. I'm not a Disney. I am, of course, I'm a fan of Disney films and stuff, but I'm not a kind of a nerd around that stuff. I haven't seen everything, but I've always been fascinated from my view of management about the Disney experience, because it is the closest thing that I can see to a perfect production, you know, a brilliant experience for people who go. And I often tell others about Disney, and I think that you can finally put me straight. So here's my story of Disney in 1 minute, and you can tell me whether that fits with your experience and how that works. Okay.
Sure.
So Walt Disney started by getting the best talented people he could together, animators from around the world, and he was obsessive over the product. He was obsessive over making a better quality product than anybody else, and he knew that that's what would work. He fought tooth and nail, a lot like Charlie Chaplin did, because they both had brothers in charge of their finances, so they could have a fight with the money guy and they could win and spend all the money and make these amazing products. And then success came, a war came, Walt felt more and more pressure, unions started, he suddenly realized what it was like to be in charge of large numbers of people. The company went public and he had much less say over the perfection of films. What happened then was he kind of retracted a little bit. He went, spent a lot of time working on this other project, a bit of a secret project in a shed somewhere. He got some of his favorite creative people, a lot like he did at the beginning with animators. He got some people he called Imagineers. He created a train track around his garden, and that formed part of the thing he was creating with these people, which turned into Disneyland California. And that, if you like, was later in his life the second time that he managed to find this energy to be obsessive over the experience of the audience, and that then happened. And in recent years John Lasseter returned to Disney and brought with him a similar kind of obsession to story and quality and all that. And those things have worked hand in hand with the best results. And Disney World and Disneyland have always seemed to me to be the embodiment of how that formula works at its best. So I walk around Disney World, Florida, and everything from the queuing system to the way the shops are laid out to the health and safety, everything is customer focused, not just in a kind of, oh, we'll give you what you want. It's in an absolutely perfect way, in a story-driven way. It's about my experience more than any other business that I can think of, I think. There's my story of Disney.
Yeah, well, I think you're right on, because I can tell you, even today at Disney, the way we focus on making sure we're excellent is, as I said, we hire better, we take our time, we look for the experts in the frontline positions that meet the guests. We're looking for great attitudes, and then we do a great job of training, testing, and enforcing our training. So everybody knows their role in the show, and they perform it, including the managers, which have to be out and about in the parks and have to look after the cast and help them and stay cool and calm and collected. And everybody knows their role, and everybody knows the behavior expected. They know that we are focused on the guests at Disney World. That's the most important thing. That's what keeps them coming back. Mm-hmm. And half our business comes from referrals of people going home and saying how great it was.
Yeah.
And so we do that. Hire right, we train better, and then we have a better culture, frankly.
And to achieve, to achieve that, it must take some. You must have to be not a hard boss, but you have to have qualities that will. I'm trying to say, those bad managers that we've talked about who believe that you rule with a whip, there must be an element of that. And yet, everyone who is playing their parts seems so well cast. That seems the secret to me. The secret seems to be the right people.
It is, and our leaders know the expectations of what we expect. You know, when I wrote that book, Creating Magic, it came from the great leader strategies at Disney of what our expectations are for leaders. Right. And every leader knows, and we are better at hiring today. We filter these people out that are these lone rangers that want to intimidate people and push people around.
Dude.
And if we hire them and they start doing that, they get fired. I mean,
how do you find that out? Because that's the other thing I've often wondered. I've often, you know, had an immediate boss perhaps who's like that, but it can take years for the bosses above them to realize what's going on.
Well, first of all, we do a few things. We take an annual survey, anonymous, for every leader from their people. We also have every executive has a confidential voicemail that people can leave messages on, and they don't have to leave their name. And then the cast members speak up if they're not being treated right, and it gets around. I mean, our managers are out and about. We know what's going on, it doesn't take long before the cast members say, "Hey, I got a boss here who's a jerk. He's not following the way you talked about it, Lee.
Yeah.
You say he's supposed to be doing this and that, and he's not doing it." And then we got to investigate that. We get involved in it, and then if it's true, we get rid of him.
Wow.
It's like if you want to join a performance, and they tell you, "Here's your job. You're the main actress, and you're supposed to do this," and then you got to do that. You can't make it up as you go.
Yeah.
You can't do your own thing.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we have, just a total clarity about what each person's job is, their behavior, how they respect and include and involve people. And if you don't do that, you're just not going to be here. And that's it.
I want to give you an example of where I've seen that recently. I was at Disneyland Paris, which I've been to a few times, and there was a we came off a ride and the security people were lined up taking us in a different direction, and we weren't sure why. And round the corner there was a young kid who had autism, I think, and he was having a panic attack and making a lot of noise, and the way that it was dealt with was unbelievably smooth. Like, it was just so well rehearsed. The kid was given space. It was obviously kind of autism-friendly training had been given. He had the space to react. There was someone near him, but not overcrowding him. The crowds were moved a lot further away than perhaps they would in other situations. You know, and it was just this... It was another moment where I just went, oh, this is, you know, it's such a well choreographed and brilliantly orchestrated thing to have everyone play their parts in that way.
Well, it is, and I would say Disney is at its best in a crisis. We are so well trained, and we have trained everybody, and there's a procedure, and safety is the number one thing at Disney, and our people are so, I mean, 9/11, we handle it fine, hurricanes, we handle it fine, accidents, I mean, That's all training. That's anticipating something's going to happen and training for the day it happens, and so everybody knows what to do.
Wow.
And that's the key.
When
does, most companies don't do that.
Just on a practical level, when it comes to training, if you want to, for example, you know, I imagine there's kind of terrorism drills and or bomb scare drills and things. When do you actually get to do that? Because it's open all year.
We have a company that puts us through simulations mm-hmm. two or three times a year.
Right.
You might get a call at 3 a.m. that something's happened, a shooting, some gas release or anything, and we have to open the command center in 30 minutes. We have 22 command centers in each property, plus the main one where I would go, and we manage it from there, and everybody knows what to do, and we have everybody in there. We start working with radio stations to tell them, employees what to do and what time to come in and what not to come in, and we just have a whole protocol for how we handle it, and we're there and everybody's on duty. And on 9/11, I would say by the plane hit the World Trade Center at 8:45, the first one, by 9:40, we had all the parks closed, started evacuating everybody, had everybody out of the parks, back in their hotels safely.
Wow.
And that, because we had practiced that many times. We didn't know it was going to be 9/11, but we didn't know what it would be.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But we practiced for something's going to happen, and I want everybody to know what to do if it does happen. Like in your home, if you have kids, you have a fire drill in the middle of the night or this or that, and you tell them where to go, what to do.
Yeah.
You have a fire extinguisher, and you know, it's just a matter of anticipating that something's going to happen.
I can't tell you how excited this makes me. from my earliest memory, the thing that always fascinated me about theatre or shows or anything wasn't what was going on the stage, it was what was going on backstage. And that was what I was always fascinated with. And the idea of 22 command centres and this level of organisation is just, what a great... I think it's there's something really special to working in anything related to entertainment. And I've often thought that all, you know, be it McDonald's or the local shop, the more they could think like entertainers, the better the business would be.
Absolutely, because every business that's what they're doing is putting on a show, and they don't realize it.
Yeah.
Some of them are putting on a pretty bad show.
Yeah, so, a lot of them.
You just gotta, even in your personal life, you gotta anticipate what are you gonna do if this happens.
Lee, did you ever wake up your kids at 3 a.m. doing a fire drill?
I didn't. I probably would now, since I learned all that at Disney about you got to be prepared. I don't even know if you can wake kids up at 3 a.m.
Probably not.
But you can carry them out the door.
Wake up in the garden wondering what dad's doing.
Exactly.
It's very strange talking to you, Lee, because... most people that I talk to, which side of the brain is supposed to be the creative one? Is it the left brain or the right brain?
I don't know. Neither one of mine are creative.
Most people I talk to are kind of, you know, come from an artistic background, perhaps, you know, more fluid. And you are so straight down the line. Like you said at the very beginning of this, you tell people as it is. And it's... I can't tell you how refreshing it is for me to hear somebody say what I've always thought, but I've always thought that was wrong. And you say it like it's common sense, which to me it does seem common sense. You just go, why would you not care about your product? You know, why would you not care about your audience experience? That would be insane. Where are they going wrong? Where do these entertainment companies they think that they can cut a corner. For me, certainly in radio experience and in theatre and in those creative things, there was this world where people just made creative things for love and for fun. And then business got involved. And at first, there were big stars, the radio star, the TV star. And then some companies, particularly it feels in Britain, like they inherited what was being learned in America, the exciting world of America, and they adopted the worst practices. So they took on the idea of cutting a corner or paying somebody nothing, of maximizing the profit margin by skimping on the product, and so many people still think that's the way to do it. You know, why on earth would you fund the product when you don't have to? You know, why would you? You know, if one of those companies took over Disney, they'd go, why would we need 22 command centers? Let's have one.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Why do you need a carpet? Well, let's just have concrete.
I think we learn. We pay. I would say most every decision we make at Disney is focused around the customer, and that's probably why we make better decisions. We really think, how's this going to impact the customer? Are they going to be happy with this? Are they going to be? Is it going to be magical? We always talk about how great we are. Is this really great? Mm. And so, just kind of that. It's part of the culture that to think about. And that's how Walt always did. He thought about the customer. How's this going? He always upgraded things. You know, he came out with Technicolor when it was all black and white movies. He always was upgrading and looking at how to make the customers want the product more. And so it's a culture, and it all starts at the top. For companies that are great, they have a great person at the top usually. And if people are average, they have an average person running the company. And,
do you know, when you're talking then about upgrading, I think actually there must be something to do with, when you say, let's talk about the queuing systems at Disney. I bore my friends with this. I always say, you know, if you're queuing to get on a ride, you go through a story. And even if you're right at the back of that queue and there's a 2-hour wait, you will be standing on a piece of ground which has got a particular type of tile. You'll have something on the wall which begins to tell the story of the ride that you're about to get on, and there won't be any gaps in that. There won't be any chips in that tile. You know, everything is important. Now, what you just said is the idea that if companies looked at the floor and said, "Well, why would we need a tile? Why don't we just use concrete? That's cheaper than tiling." Yeah. If they need to have the imagination or the empathy to be able to, it's almost subjectivity, isn't it? How can they build a great product if they have no taste? So if they don't like tiles, if they're fine with concrete, then it'll be concrete.
Yeah, and I think you got to think about it. Telling the story is the key, and you got to know what the story is, and you got to remember, like you said a second ago, everything matters if you want to be great. If you don't want to be great, everything doesn't matter. And that's the best companies in the world, you know, Apple or Costco or American Express. Everything matters, from the introduction to how you meet people to how they treat you when you have a problem to litter and sanitation and bathroom cleanliness and you name it. It all matters if you want to be great. And I really think, you know, greatness and excellence is a state of mind. You either have it or you don't.
Yes.
You don't have it, you're going to make the wrong decisions.
That's it. That's exactly it. This is the first time. This is what I've discovered today. Is I'm imagining now that if you went into the home of one of the bosses that you and I would say is not a very good boss and doesn't have this imagination around detail, if you went into one of their homes, it would probably be the most awful decorated home. It's almost probably. it's not their fault that they are the way they are. They just wouldn't think to put a nice carpet down because they don't know what a nice carpet is.
there you go. I mean, it's true. You only know what you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I tell everybody, travel, go visit art museums, get outside your box. And first of all, just think every morning. Most people don't even think. That's why they don't get anywhere.
Yeah.
They're just kind of going along for the ride, and they're not making a difference, and they're not pushing things to be greater and better and better and better.
Let's talk about travel for a moment. I travel a lot. Hence why we accidentally find ourselves in countries that happen to have a Disney World or a Disneyland quite often. And we just went to Dubai, Bangkok, and Hong Kong. Bangkok's just an insane, brilliant place.
Yeah.
We were there when the king died, and that was fascinating. But Hong Kong, when we were there, we went to Disney. And it's one of my favourite Disneylands. It could possibly be my favourite Disneyland. And that's quite controversial, I would imagine, because it's a bit smaller than the other ones and there's slightly less there. Did you have you've been there, haven't you?
Yes.
And the castle's a lot smaller than elsewhere. That bothered me.
Yeah, but I think what bothered you, some of the things that bothered you, you were comparing it to other places.
Yeah, that's it.
And most 99.9% of those people that go to Hong Kong and never been to the others.
Yeah, I mean, right.
It's everything in life's a comparison, you know.
But that let me down, Lee. Why didn't they build a bigger castle? Why make that?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's because the people are shorter. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think so. But I tell you, I was walking around it, and I said to my wife, "I love the feel of this part. I don't know why. I love the way that it, the way the walkways go, and the like. The feeling of it feels different for some reason. It doesn't feel as tight as some of the others." And the next day, she said to me, she was reading online, she said, "Oh, it was built with feng shui in mind because it's
in
China."
That's right.
Isn't that interesting?
That's exactly right. I forgot about that, but that's true.
Yeah.
Because I worked on the Marriott in Hong Kong, and we had the same issue of having to position everything just right and toward the water and toward the... Yeah, that was a real learning.
That quite normal in terms of creative challenges? When you're creating things in different areas of the world, there's a lot to consider in terms of cultural differences.
Well, I think you just go out of your way to make sure you understand the culture before you start trying to do business in the culture. Because if you miss and you mistakes, and like we did in France, we didn't do a good job with the culture in the beginning, and with food and wine and pricing and rooms, hotel rooms and stuff. So you got to really understand the culture, and that's why I love traveling, because the more I travel, the more I understand the culture from different countries, and the more I feel good about people from everywhere.
And the perspective of your country when you travel and you see the perspective of your own place. Britain always feels very different to me when I get back home, and you see it in difference. What do you think the biggest challenge is for you? Are how many days off an election at the moment? 5 days or something?
I may move over to your place. I mean, I might like Brexit better than I like what's happening here.
Really?
This is like the total failure of leadership. I mean, it's embarrassing, frankly, to me.
Why?
Just those two, that we can't do better. We got 350 million people in this country, and we can't come up with some people that don't have a big list of bad things about them. Mm. I mean, come on. Mm. Nobody's going to trust either one of them.
Yeah.
And it's just sad, and that's what I tell people. In leadership, be careful what you say and do, because your reputation can take you down. Mm. And it's just sad. And there's a lot, you know, half the country's mad about something, and half the country's happy about something. Next thing you know, it'll be a very close race, and... actually, I just may move to Canada. It's closer, so
that's nice there. They do great.
Or New Zealand, maybe.
They do great cheese on chips with gravy.
Yes, they do. I know. But so we are in a kind of a. I tell people, if you want to learn about leadership, good and bad, watch the election process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think a couple of very interesting candidates there, but in, Trump particularly is a fascinating thing when talking business and about that different business styles and how he perhaps got to where he got to. You just sound very miserable about it.
I am.
I mean, but the Brexit, it used to be that I used to look at America. I think America is one of the it is the finest country in the world in terms of how it's designed. The blueprint is still something that I would kill almost to live in America and to work in America. It's such a shame that I can't just get a job there. It's awful. But that said, I used to look at every decision from everything happening from health to guns to the things that make you different from Europe and the biggest controversial issues. And I used to think, well, it's very young. This is the very young brother to a very, very old Europe. And since Brexit, I'm not able to take that patronising stance anymore, Lee. I feel like we have stepped backwards in the name of sovereignty, as if we still rule the world, and we don't.
I hope it works out fine. We worry about Brexit too, and I worry more for the UK than it's just. I hope it works out for you.
Well, I just hope that they figure out a way of changing it, really, undoing it, which they might. So anyway, look, we've probably almost exhausted ourselves now, but you've had more than your fair share, probably, of success. Well, not fair share, you deserve the success you've had, but what drives you to keep working? Do you mind if I ask you how old you are?
72.
Lee, there's a porch with a rocking chair, a cigar and a whiskey with your name on it somewhere. Why are you not sat on it while in the days away learning how to play the banjo?
You know what? Because I get a lot of positive feedback about what I teach people and what they learn from me, and that's satisfying. It's invigorating. It gives me energy.
Yeah.
And sitting around is boring.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
Boring.
Yeah.
I mean, when I don't have a trip or I'm bored to death, you know, it's just boring. And you sit in that rocking chair, that's where you'll die one morning, because you got to get up, move around, do something. And I still love traveling, meeting people. I do seminars and speeches all over the world. I went to Australia last year. I went to Kuwait. I went to Portugal, all UK. I did work in up in Manchester.
Oh, that's where I am.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Betterbathrooms.com.
Ah, I think I bought my bathroom from there.
You probably did. And I've been there 2 years in a row over there to do work for them and do 2 days of training. And
wow.
They were great. And I flew into Manchester and
yeah.
Yeah. So it's fun. I learn. I get smarter, and you know, when you get smarter, you get you feel better. And
how do I feel like what you've got to offer, and I feel like we do similar things in slightly different worlds. I go and talk to people about how to get the best out of talent in radio and theatre and things like that, how to treat creative people so that you can get the best out of them. And you're doing that for large businesses. And I feel like the challenge that I have is that how are you going to get through the door? You're never going to be invited to talk or to help at the places that are the worst, that really need it. Do you find that you're invited by people who are, you know, they're 10% converted already, and you're there to help them put it into practice?
Yeah, I say, you know, people hire you for either education or crisis. You know, if people are really having trouble with their business, I get hired. And
right.
When they're wanting to get better, or the competition's getting too severe, they want to get better. Or like legislation, healthcare is having to get better because the government's putting a lot of legislation on them.
Mm.
Education, reform. So I get a lot of work with universities and colleges. So it just depends. But, yeah, you're right. The worst companies don't usually call you because they don't even know they're that bad yet. So,
yeah, they wouldn't think to ask.
Usually not. And But I get a lot of people read my books, and then they'll call me and book me to come and work with them. I was on the phone with a lady right then when you called that had in a bakery business, and they're getting really big, and she wants me to come work with the CEO and do some training for them. So up in Canada.
Wow.
So yeah. So it just comes in different ways, different points of view. And usually, if the CEO doesn't want it to happen, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. My wife and I have started a business, Lee. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
You can buy a share in this and franchise it if you like. We have started looking after rabbits.
Really?
Yeah, so we have a couple of rabbits, house rabbits. I don't know whether this is a thing in America yet, but rabbits running around the house, and they're great.
Unfortunately, we didn't have them running around. When I was a little boy, we were very poor, and we lived with my grandmother, and my grandfather raised rabbits out in the back to eat them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's apparently where the hutch originates. The French kept them in the corner in the kitchen. But they're great. They're like cats and dogs, but vegetarian, so there's less smells around.
Cool.
we decided we'd convert our garage and started advertising, and within a month we were sold out, and we've been busy ever since, and it gives us enough money to go on holiday to great places a couple of times a year, and it's brilliant.
Good for you.
But it's great, and I think it's a wonderful feeling when a business is successful and it starts to grow. It's really nice, and it's a shame to see businesses become embroiled in just bad practice where maybe they've cornered the customers, and so they don't need to worry anymore about pleasing them, and then they find that they start dripping off, and people's lives are damaged by that, I suppose, aren't they?
That's what happens.
Yeah. Anyway, there we go. So thank you, Lee. And did you ever get to drive the monorail?
I did, absolutely.
Oh.
One time.
Oh.
It was fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's the most important question done.
All right.
Lee, thank you very much. Next time you're in Manchester, let me know, and I will take you to the best pub in the land.
Good. Thank you so much.
I owe you a pint. Thank you very much, Lee.
You take care.
Check out Lee's website, leecockerell.com. Thanks, Lee. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.